Report from Radio Maria, featuring an international brunch, lunch, and dinner menu, influenced by Caribbean, Asian, Indian, Spanish, and Latin cuisines. Radio Maria in downtown Champaign, a restaurant of unusual sensibilities. Programming on WILL AM is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting Krannert Center debut artist, pianist Wei Jane Chen, in a Sunday Salon Recital performance on May 2nd. For more information, contact the Krannert Center ticket office at 217-333-6280 or visit krannertcenter.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program for the morning. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Travis Stansel, and Henry Frain at the controls this morning. Just a second here, we're going to get lined up and loaded up with our guest for this part of Focus 580. We'll be talking in this hour of the program with Jeffrey Hollander. He is the CEO of the nation's leading company that's in the business of manufacturing, distributing environmentally safe household products. And he is also much involved in an effort that we're starting to see more and more among business people toward making social responsibility a core kind of business concept. He argues for that in a book that he has co-authored that's just out now. The title of the book is What Matters Most? How a Small Group of Pioneers is Teaching Social Responsibility to Big Business and Why Big Business is Listening. Basic Books is the publisher on the book. It's out now if you want to take a look at it. And in the book, it makes the argument, he certainly does, that social responsibility really needs to become part of the way that every company does business. But he really goes further than that. He makes this argument that making that a part of your day-to-day business operations not only is a good thing for the community and for the world, but it also improves financial performance. So in this part of Focus 580, we'll talk a little bit about why doing good is good for business with Jeffrey Hollander. And if you have questions or comments, certainly they are welcome, as always. We just ask people to be brief, and we ask that so that we can keep the program moving along and get as many people in as possible. But, of course, anybody who'd like to join the conversation is welcome to do that. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. It's good anywhere you can hear us. So if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number, and that is 800-222-9455. So 333-9455. That's the number for people who are here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Mr. Hollander, hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
I'm doing all right.
Good. Maybe just to begin, I would ask you to talk a little bit about your own company, the company that you started, Seventh Generation.
Sure. Seventh Generation is a 16-year-old company based in Burlington, Vermont. It is the leading brand of natural household products, ranging from paper products made from recycled unbleached fiber, laundry products, dish products, all types of cleaning materials, as well as baby diapers and trash bags. And our focus is, as a company, is to both create products that have a minimal impact on the environment, provide consumers with healthier products that they can use in their home, and to operate our business internally as well as externally with the values that I consider in keeping with being a responsible business.
Yeah. Now, as I understand it, of the people who are interested in making and distributing the kind of products that you do, while Seventh Generation, it may be the biggest company that does this, it's still I don't mean anything bad by this, but you know, still, when you compare Seventh Generation to something like Procter and Gamble or Kimberly-Clark, it's a lot smaller company.
Right. Well, we might say that that's an understatement.
Yes.
We are definitely a small company, although the business is growing at about 25% a year over the past 5 years, and it is now distributed in most of the large grocery chains like Albertsons, Kroger, and Safeway. And there is no question that Seventh Generation is a small player. But in many ways, our impact is not just on the number of customers that buy products from us. It's on conducting our business in a way that we hope will raise the bar for all companies, not just in our category, but in other categories.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you would want to make the argument that doing business the way you do, with a kind of corporate philosophy that you have, is not a hindrance to growth. That it is possible for your company, I'm sure you feel it's possible for your company to continue to grow and indeed get to be a big company and still do business the way that you want to do business.
I think given what's happening in the world today, in the business climate, being responsible is rapidly becoming an imperative for any company of any size to succeed. The world, thankfully, and in many cases almost invisibly to the public, has gone through some fundamental changes over the past couple of years that really make responsibility a growing imperative.
And certainly we know that there are a number of very large companies that are thinking about this, that are concerned about how they're regarded by the public in these respects. Now, I don't know how much because you've looked at this, you can tell me the difference between a company like Nike, for example, that's come under a great deal of criticism. How well they are, how much of what they're doing is purely public relations, and how much of what they're doing actually does address the issues, and in what ways that they're really changing the way they do it. And I don't mean necessarily just to pick on Nike, because there are other big companies that are trying to do the same thing.
Well, Nike's a great example. First, we need to step back a little bit and recognize that all companies, including Seventh Generation, are somewhere within a spectrum of, sure, there's a few totally terrible companies. I'm not sure that there's any perfect companies, but most businesses fall somewhere in the spectrum of good to bad. And the question is, where are they in that spectrum? First of all, we need transparency and visibility so that we can make that determination, so that companies, as a first activity, need to publish what is called a corporate social responsibility report, so that we have the information we need to have to help decide how good they're doing. And if we take Nike, Nike is a great example, I think, of a company that has taken many, many very positive initiatives. While they have made a number of very large and fundamental mistakes, now when I look at them over time, I think that they are making more of an effort to move in the right direction than most companies are, despite the mistakes they've made. And interestingly, Nike has been, in a sense, so traumatized by getting caught doing the wrong thing that many of their initiatives they are even afraid to talk about today. The fact that they're probably the nation's leading purchaser of organic cotton, the fact that they were the first company to eliminate PVC from their product line, the fact that they have done tremendous work while they have had labor problems in their supply chain. They've done much great work to eliminate toxic chemicals from their supply chain. But not to go on too long, but these unfortunately are complicated questions. And really what we want as consumers is an up or down answer. Should I buy Nike sneakers? Should I drink Starbucks coffee? And while we can come to those conclusions, we have to remember that all of these companies are somewhere in that spectrum.
Yeah. Maybe I should introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580. We're talking with Jeffrey Hollander. He's the president and the CEO of Seventh Generation. It is the largest U.S. brand of green household products. He's also the co-author of a book that looks at corporate social responsibility and how it is more and more corporations, large businesses, are thinking about that. The title of his book is What Matters Most, and it is out now in the bookstore if you want to look at it. It's published by Basic Books. Questions also are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here, and why don't we go ahead and bring him into the conversation in Aurora on our toll-free line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hi. I'm very interested in this as an environmentalist and a birder who appreciates that there are places that are green so that our birds have habitat.
Yes?
I wondered if you could tell me the name of products that I might be aware of in stores. I'll have to admit, I haven't kept up and I didn't realize about Nike. Could you tell me what products or what companies?
Sure. Well, let's say I can't give you a list of everything you should buy, but let me say two things. First of all,
okay,
we need to recognize the important role that we as consumers have in impacting business. Every time we spend a dollar, we are casting a vote for a particular company whose products we're buying, and we're supporting the way they operate and their values and the impact they have on the environment. And so those decisions as consumers, while you might not think they matter tremendously. So we need to be very intentional about the products we purchase. And rather than give you a laundry list of who to buy from, there's a couple of resources that are helpful. There's a website called idealswork.com.
And you can
idealswork.com.
Okay.
And if you want to buy sneakers or you want to go to a hotel, you can type in the issues that matter to you, like the environment, and they will tell you which companies have the best record in that particular area, whether it's the environment, whether it's human rights, whether it's how they treat minorities. And that's one of a bunch of different references that will help you and everyone listening make better decisions about what companies they want to support.
Is there anything on the now, I am a great reader of products. I buy something, I read the label, and I much recognize where, what country the product comes from, et cetera, et cetera. Is there anything on a product, if it has packaging, that will inform me as to its I don't know what term to use.
Yeah. Generally speaking, the information that's on the packaging, while helpful and valuable, usually doesn't give you enough information to make a decision about whether to support the company that's making that product. And while if you buy shampoo, it might tell you the ingredients, it doesn't really tell you anything about the shampoo manufacturer. In terms of something like that, I think Aveda is probably my favorite company to support when it comes to personal care products. A-V-E-D-A, Aveda.
Because I really can't, I was going to go out of the house because I have things I have to do, but when I heard that you were going to be on, I thought, I have to listen to this program.
Well,
as you said, it's imperative. And I feel very much to inform my family, beginning with my family, about these things. And I can't, it's difficult for me to think that there isn't greed in all this. I just think it's a wonderful happening. I'm very happy to hear about it.
Well,
because I myself, over my years of bird watching, have seen areas go out where I can't bird anymore, that I don't see birds anymore that I used to see. I mean, I'm using that as a measure of what
I think all of us in our own way experience the negative impacts to the environment, or even our communities, and I think that we need to not become cynical about how bad things are getting in the world, and really turn our attention to what we can do to make a positive difference.
Yeah, that's why I decided not to go out and to listen to your program.
And I think that the opportunities for us to make a positive difference, you know, of course, Seventh Generation is in the business of selling products, but I really think that we can have a big impact as consumers. If we are investors and we have money invested in different companies, we need to look very carefully at where that money is invested. And even as employees, wherever we work, are we trying to facilitate that company to become more responsible?
And you talk about investments. I won't invest in a company. I won't invest in Coca-Cola. I think it's doing a terrible thing to our young children. Their lives there, and I won't invest in cigarettes. I won't put my money there. So well, I have made that distinction.
Well, I think if all of us take that kind of action and remain committed to making a difference, we'd be amazed what a positive impact we can have on the world. So I encourage all of us to think about where we want to make a difference, whether it's the car that we drive, whether it's the bank we put our money in. Everything we do almost all day long gives us an opportunity to make a positive difference.
I want to tell you one other thing. I am working on a bird count. As I said, I'm a bird watcher. And we're doing a year count starting spring of 2004 to spring of 2005 on Kendall County, Illinois, to see how many birds are in that county, and let that be a what, hallmark or a meter for telling people in future generations the birds that were seen in that county. So that's why I say I'm most interested in what you have to say.
Great.
Because,
great.
And I thank you.
All right. Well, I thank you for the call. Let me just ask you one question, and I want to. We have somebody else I want to get on to. I guess I hear what the caller has to say, and I wonder just how representative she is of the American consumer generally. And I expect that when manufacturers and people who make and sell things think about their customers, they think obviously people want a quality product, but that they're also very concerned with price, and that may be their bottom line. And I wonder how many manufacturers think, well, what people want is they want the best price that they can get, you know, the best product at the cheapest price, and that, however, how many consumers are saying, now, wait a minute, yeah, sure, I want the best product at the best price, but I am concerned about some other things. You know, I'm concerned about environmental impact of the way you make your products, and I'm concerned about conditions for the people, wages and conditions for the people who make the products. You know, how many American consumers do you think those kinds of issues are getting to be as important as price? And some people might even say that's more important than price.
The answer is not enough. While there is a growing and vocal minority who want to take a broad range of issues into account when they go to purchase products, generally it is a minority. And that is one of the challenges that we face. Luckily, there are a lot of drivers beyond just consumers that are pushing business to move in a more responsible direction, but it is critical. And I guess we have to also be fair. I mean, there is, you know, I think that the success of Walmart is a testament to how many people want to buy things at the lowest price they can possibly buy and not care about the other implications. But at the same time, you know, if you are in a lower or middle income bracket, it's tough to be in a position to spend extra money to buy products that embody values that are important to you. And what we need to do is ensure that everybody who is making anything lives up to certain standards. And there's only so much that we can do as consumers. Some of that has to be done from a legislative perspective. We need to not let people get away with making products that have a terribly adverse impact on the environment as a way of making them cheaply. And we find that Unfortunately, if we look at automobiles, you know, you can go purchase an automobile that gets terrible fuel efficiency. And that poor fuel efficiency creates air pollution that increases allergy, asthma, and all kinds of adverse health effects. And you as a consumer and the automobile manufacturer doesn't pay the price of that adverse effect. We as a society do. And that's a fundamental structural problem that we face because we, both as companies and as individuals, don't often bear the responsibility for the impacts of our purchasing decisions.
We are getting close to our midpoint here. I have a couple of other callers. Maybe just real quick, I'll reintroduce the guest for this part of Focus 580, Jeffrey Hollander. He's president and CEO of Seventh Generation. It's a company that's based in Vermont. It is the largest U.S. brand of green household products, and they make things like detergent and household cleaners and bathroom tissue and paper plates and things like that. And if you're interested in finding out more and you do have internet access, they have a website, which is www.seventhgeneration.com. So you can check that out. He is also the co-author of a book that talks about corporate social responsibility and the number of companies that are starting to think more and more about that. The title of that book is What Matters Most, and the subtitle is How a Small Group of Pioneers is Teaching Social Responsibility to Big Business and Why Big Business is Listening. It's published by Basic Books. And we have a couple of other people here ready to go who would like to talk with us. Then I think our next caller is in Champaign and on line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wondered if you could tell us what the derivation of the name of your company is.
Sure. Comes from the Iroquois Indians, and the complete saying is, in our every deliberation, we should consider the impact of our decisions on the next seven generations. And that, in many ways, embodies the mission and vision of what we do. We try to look at our decisions widely over a long period of time to try to make sure that we are making responsible decisions and taking into account all of the consequences of our actions.
I ask because there's an economic syndrome which says that companies that are family companies tend to last only three generations. They then split up and become multinationals or whatever. And so seven generations would imply something like John Deere Company that's been around for a
yes.
long, long time. So I was wondering if you were riding on that sort of...
Well, we're still in our first generation as a company.
I realize.
And I think that there are many challenges for businesses today to balance their social, environmental considerations with the economic realities in the marketplace. And I think that there's some great models of companies out there that have done that. Given the structure of the public markets, and Seventh Generation was for 5 years a public company. In 1999, we bought all the stock back to become a private company. I think that there's lots of negative challenges in the public marketplace that come to bear on public companies.
Okay, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Right, thank you. We have another caller here in the Chicago area on our line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just had a few comments, and I have a question. I buy seventh generation products for all my household use, usually at a health food store. And I very much agree with your comments about consumers. The fact is that I, as a consumer, have simply made a decision that I am going to spend considerably more than, say, my neighbor is on, you know, environmentally safe products for myself and the world. And I think that, you know, that's something that all consumers have to do, whether they're, you know, relatively well-to-do or not. Now, I, at one point, recall getting a catalog, that the Seventh Generation company had a catalog.
Yes.
And I still get it now, but it's now...
Harmony.
Harmony, or is it Gaia? I can't keep track. There's been several changes, so that I will make a point that if, you know, if I choose to buy organic clothing, I know that I'm spending considerably more, and sometimes not necessarily considerably more because, you know, I'm not buying high fashion. But I was curious about the catalog situation.
Sure. Yes, we did have a mail order catalog, which we sold to GAIAM in 1995, and it was renamed Harmony. And we focused our business on selling as a wholesaler to companies like GAIAM, as well as Whole Foods and Wild Oats and all kinds of grocery stores. So that is the focus of our business today. And let me talk just a little bit about the price issue, because there is a real challenge in environmental products costing more. And we have worked hard to bring our prices down. They certainly are probably 25 to 50% lower than they were 10 years ago.
Yes, I would agree, because I've been doing this a long time.
Yes, and we want our prices wherever possible to be comparable to traditional products, so that we take away both the challenge for lower-income people and we make the transition easier. But you're right, today, in some cases, the products do cost more money, and it does require that commitment. One of the places that we've seen more and more consumers purchasing seventh generation is for health reasons, particularly with the cleaning products. There are so many perfumes and fragrances and chemicals in cleaning products that aggravate the asthma condition or allergenic condition of consumers, that one of the places that we find lots of people switching to our products is simply for those individuals who have those types of health challenges.
I do wish we could see more of your products in mainstream groceries.
Well, it's happening. In certain parts of the company, this morning I'm sitting here in Denver, and in the city of Denver, every grocery store in the city sells seventh generation products.
Oh, really? Well, that's good.
And we're moving in that direction across the rest of the country.
Great. I applaud all your
efforts. Well, thank you so much for your support.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's go on to talk with somebody else. This next caller is in Kankakee on line number two. Hello.
Mr. Hollander.
Yes, sir.
Could you comment on the work and thinking of William McDonough, McDonough,
sure,
author of Cradle to Cradle?
Sure.
I'll take my answer on the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, Bill McDonough is certainly what I would consider a visionary in thinking about the products, as well as buildings and architecture, and trying to understand how we can design things in a more sustainable fashion, not just so that they have a minimal negative impact on the environment, so that they have perhaps even a positive impact. And he has written a whole number of books, which I recommend, and recently has had tremendous success in designing green buildings, buildings that are not only better for the environment, but buildings that are healthier for the inhabitants who work or live in them.
And again, other people who are listening, you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. I'm sure that while all companies are interested in goodwill as far as consumers are concerned, you know, they want people to think well of them, they're also in business to make money. Can you make an argument that not only can you by including corporate social responsibility as part of the way that you do business, that not only will you enhance, as a company, you will enhance your image, but this will be reflected in the bottom line, that it won't end up costing you more to do this?
The notion that being responsible costs extra money, which has been around for generations, is no longer true today. Whether we want to look at research done by Morgan Stanley, research done by the Harvard Business School, or hundreds of other pieces of research done over the past couple of years, the evidence says that the most responsible companies make more money. The Morgan Stanley research that was done looking at over 800 global companies over the past 3 years concluded that the most responsible companies actually made 24% more money than the least responsible companies. And the Harvard Business School research done by Lynn Sharp Payne in a book called Value Shift. And by the way, all of this information is on the website of the book, What Matters Most, all one word, .biz. The Harvard research that was done that looked at over 100 academic studies concluded that in 66% of all of the studies that were done, responsible businesses outperformed less responsible companies, and in only 4 studies was there a negative correlation. That does not give you a guarantee that if you're responsible, you're going to make more money. But the big picture today is that those companies that are responsible for the environment, take better care of their workers, companies that are good members of their community, that buy, build, and market products in a responsible way, do perform better financially.
And is, I guess we sort of touched on this earlier, but is there some sort of scale issue here that says, okay, if you're running a relatively small company, you have a company the size of Seventh Generation, you can do that. But if you're General Motors, you can't.
Well, all of the research that I'm referring to is actually about large publicly held companies. We can look at, I mean, the companies in the Morgan Stanley research are large multinational companies. And there is lots of evidence, whether we want to look at companies like Hewlett-Packard or Dell Computer, companies like Patagonia, companies like Aveda, companies like Timberland. There are no shortage of middle and large size companies. I mean, Toyota is a great example. Toyota is the world's leading marketer and innovator of fuel-efficient and environmentally responsible cars, and they have become the number 2 automaker in the world, and I think it won't be long before they overtake General Motors. So there are lots of examples of companies who are practicing this on a large scale. Again, that doesn't mean these companies are perfect and they're doing everything right, because that's never the case. But the leaders and the innovators in this area are also the companies that are performing best financially.
I don't know if we have kind of talked around it, whether it maybe in a sense this is backtracking a little bit, but I wonder how, when we use a phrase like corporate social responsibility, how many people will know, have some sense of what that means, I mean, what really it is that we're talking about.
Well, I think we can approach it from two different angles. One is probably a sense that people are familiar with in terms of being responsible in terms of your impact on the environment, taking good care and treating your workers responsibly, taking care of the health and safety at the plants that you operate in, being a good community member in the communities that you do business. All of those attributes have to be made visible and transparent to the public through publishing something called a corporate social responsibility report. And today, thousands of companies publish these reports. And to me, that is a leading indicator that a company is taking its responsibility seriously. Most large companies, if they publish a report of this type, will post it on their website. And to my mind, that report is a first step in being a responsible company, because it is a statement about what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, and what they're committed to improving and fixing in the future.
I'm sure that there are cases where, as a marketing tool, companies are dressing themselves in green, but it maybe not doesn't go any deeper than that. How common is that? It seems to me that when you started out thinking about this, you expected to find a lot of that, and that maybe you were a little surprised that it wasn't quite as common as you had thought.
Well, that is often called greenwashing, an activity that a company will create some positive program, in a sense, to distract the public's attention away from things they're doing that are not right. And unfortunately, we see that quite a bit. I often get questions. People say, well, look at Philip Morris, the cigarette company. They give away so much money, you know, does that make them a good company? Well, of course it doesn't make them a good company. The types of things that companies do, they talk about the money they give away. They have something called cause-related marketing where they'll pick a nonprofit organization that they're going to support, and they promote their relationship to that nonprofit. Now, by itself, those activities are not bad, but we need to see the whole picture. We need to understand the full range of those activities and the full impact that that company has on the planet. And just because, I mean, Walmart's now running a series of ads talking about individual things that they are doing, excuse me, that are good and responsible. And that's nice, and that's well, and that's good, but they need to address, as a company, the broader set of challenges. What happens when they pay so many people wages that are so low that their employees can't survive and have to depend upon food stamps and going to the emergency room because they don't have health care? We need to know the whole picture when it comes to a company, not just a single attribute.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. And again, our guest is Jeffrey Hollander. He's the CEO of Seventh Generation. It is the America's largest brand of green household products. He is also the co-author of a book that looks at corporate social responsibility and how many businesses are now starting to think more and more about that and incorporate that into their business practices. The title of the book is What Matters Most, and it is published by Basic Books. And we have some other callers here. We'll go next to Urbana and line number one. Hello.
When are we going to get to the point that our government becomes socially responsible? They certainly, in terms of, you know, military, you know, some of these sites that were used, you know, munition sites, you know, et cetera, used. I mean, those are big contaminators.
Yep.
Kind of thing. So what's it going to take, you know?
Well, you know, it probably starts with us ensuring that we elect public officials who care about these issues. But I would say that we face many, many challenges today from a government and regulatory perspective. And if you contrast what's happening in America to what is happening in some parts of Europe, you find in Europe that there is a much more collaborative focus between business and government on dealing with things like the environment. And in the United States, I'm afraid that we often are moving in the wrong direction rather than in the right direction. And I think the only way to change that is for us as citizens and us as voters to hold our elected and governmental officials accountable. It doesn't help that we live in a nation where only half the people vote, and where many of us are disengaged from the political process. I beg people to get involved, to communicate to their politicians, to make their concerns known, and to make sure that we vote in the elections that are coming up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's enough then. Okay.
All right. Well, and I think Mr. Hollander, you actually I think do make the argument in the book that one might think about the business community, or at least segments of the business community, as being an alternative kind of force for accomplishing some of these things, particularly when it comes to the environment and also maybe labor issues.
Sure.
that government is not doing. You're sort of suggesting to people that, well, here's another sort of a fifth column here, and that is the business world. We might not expect that from them, but
yep,
that's a possibility.
That's absolutely true. I mean, in many cases, you can argue that business is the biggest global influence on the planet. And when you have a company like Intel that builds plants all over the world to the highest guidelines and highest environmental rules and highest health and safety rules of any country that they do business with anywhere in the world, they are setting a goal and a benchmark for themselves that is way over what local governments are setting for them. And we're finding more and more companies holding themselves to higher standards than our government would hold them to, and that is a very positive influence, and we need to make sure that we support those companies in their work.
I think our earlier caller from Aurora would like to get in with one more question, so why don't we go ahead and do that here on our toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, I wanted to address the subject of companies that have planned obsolescence. I purchased a coffee maker, and I went to a store that only sold those products, B and D products. I'm not mentioning the company. If you want me to, I will. And I said, but it'll only last a year. I said, I don't want it then.
Right.
Because it'll only go in the dump.
Right.
And I had a daughter-in-law that had a coffee maker that went out in a year. And I said, take it back to the company. Let them know that it isn't working. And she didn't want to do it.
Yep.
Well, I didn't make her, but I just suggested. Because we have to let the companies know that we don't want a product and overload our garbage systems.
That's absolutely true. I mean, from an environmental perspective, one of the best things we can do is buy well-made products that last a long time and then can be safely recycled or disposed of. When we buy products for cheap that don't last long, often we do ourselves a disservice. We can go into a store and buy something that is half the price of something else, and when it only lasts a year, you think about the cost of having to replace that every year, you're actually spending a lot more money. I think Consumer Reports generally does a pretty good job evaluating the durability and how long products last. It's a good guide to make sure that we are buying quality. They don't tell you anything about the environmental impacts or the health and safety of the product, but they do a pretty good job in telling you how long the product will last and whether or not it's a good value.
Well, the other thing that's happening, I bought a new refrigerator from a company that I had a washing machine for 35 years now. I have had this washing machine and it's still working. So I bought the refrigerator thinking that the name brand was a very good name brand, but I've had it 2 years and slowly everything is breaking on it.
Yep. Well, again, we need to be careful and unfortunately sometimes do some research before we buy. And then, as you suggest, we need to be very vocal to companies to let them know. We let too many businesses get away with things that we shouldn't let them. If things break, if they don't work well, if the service is poor, we need to be very, very vocal and let those companies know it's not okay, you won't do business with them anymore, and you will let all your friends know that you don't think they should buy either.
Yeah. Well, again, I appreciate the comments of the caller. We got about 10 minutes left here, and we got to want to get some other folks in. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. I think we have another caller here ready to go in Urbana, and that's line number one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I just want to make one quick comment about the previous caller was talking about, you know, buying a very high quality product a few years back and having a very good experience with it and then decided that, well, okay, this product is very good, and so the company that manufactured this product, well they're a brand name now. And so the consumer, you know, trusts that corporation to make good products and so buys their product, assuming that, you know, that it'll be just as good as products in the past. You know, my experience is that manufacturers are getting very, very creative about, you know, actually figuring out how to make products that will break down, you know, after a certain amount of time that is just usually just slightly longer than the warranty period. And I think they actually spend money, you know, doing this. And there's a term that they use in the design of products. It's called planned obsolescence. And it's just, you know, it's very, I think it's very common these days. And a lot of companies go to a lot of effort to try to make products that, you know, are very appealing, and they rely on their brand name. You know, ultimately, I guess the old saying, you know, buyer beware. Every single consumer is responsible for finding out whether the manufacturers really are making stuff that's good still. And in general, you should never assume it. So anyway, I'd like to just hang up and listen.
Okay. Well, fair comment. You want to comment on that, Mr. Hollander?
No, I think that is unfortunately true in many cases. And again, you know, I think that we have to go to a certain extent to the perhaps the heart of the matter, which is what kind of values and what kind of companies are we dealing with? There are companies who, as part of their core corporate philosophy, are committed to making the best products they can make that last the longest period of time possible. One of those that I always think of is Patagonia, who makes clothing that cost a little bit more money, but part of their mission is to make things that will last you a lifetime and will never go out of style. I think companies like Timberland have the same philosophy, to make products well, make them safely, make them in an environmentally responsible way, and make quality products that last. And I think that we need to try to understand where we can what kind of company we're doing business with. Is that company committed to providing you with the best quality they possibly can or not? And, of course, businesses are all across the spectrum. But for all of the ones that are not doing the right thing and making products with planned obsolescence that don't last very long, there are a lot of good companies that don't operate in that way.
One of the things, among the things that people can take into consideration if they're trying to make a decision about whether they're going to do business with a particular company is that company's labor practices. And in fact, if you go to that website that you mentioned earlier, idealswork.com, and you decide you're going to look for a particular kind of product, and then they'll offer you a number of things. They'll ask, which of these things are you concerned about? Are you concerned about environmental impact? But then they'll also ask questions about the policies that the company has. As far as its human capital is concerned. And I guess I think that's interesting, and I wonder, you know, makes me want to ask the question, why should a consumer be concerned? For example, if they're looking for toilet paper and they're thinking about buying from your company, they may be concerned about environmental impact of the manufacturing process. Why should they care how you treat your workers?
Well, you know, for a variety of reasons. And I mean, we can just look at one single factor. If you are paying your employees or your workers a minimum wage, in many cases, that is not going to provide them with enough income to live adequately. What happens when people don't make enough money? They need to rely on food stamps. They need to, if they don't have health insurance, go to the emergency room. And we as a society end up supplementing the cost for their income. When you have employees that are using food stamps rather than make enough money from their company, we as a public, through our taxes, are paying for those food stamps. We're paying for many of those visits to the emergency room. And while we think that, you know, the implications of those minimum wages don't reach us, they do as a society. So you can look at it from an economic perspective, and there have been some wonderful books written recently. One is called The Working Poor, that describe the challenges of people who want to be in the workforce but for whom being in the workforce, making a minimum wage, particularly if they've got families, doesn't provide them with enough income to survive. And of course you can look at it, which I do, from a humanitarian perspective, and if you have a workforce, aside from not being paid well, but is not being taken care of properly from a health and safety perspective, so that there are higher accidents, the air in the plant isn't safe to breathe. You know, I can't feel good about buying a product that has had an adverse effect on the workers who made that product.
We have some other callers here. We'll try to get at least one more. Urbana, line one. Hello.
Yes, I was wondering of what ideas your guests would have as to what kind of legislative or government rules would help companies become more socially responsible. I'm thinking of things such as the SEC proposals to make it easier for shareholders to nominate board of directors, because currently I believe it takes $250,000 just even to suggest it. And I'll hang up and listen.
Sure. Well, I think that proposal that you're referring to, which allows shareholders to nominate board members, is a wonderful example of legislation that empowers shareholders to have more of an impact on the companies they're invested in, and I'm a great supporter of that. There was a recent change to the SEC rules in the past year where mutual funds had to disclose how they voted on proxy matters, so that if you are invested in a mutual fund, you can actually see how they're voting those shares and what things they're supporting and not supporting. From an environmental perspective, unfortunately, we have lots and lots of legislation that encourages consumers and businesses to do the wrong thing. The auto mileage standards, because of the increasing purchase of trucks and SUVs, we are making no progress in having automobiles and trucks that are more fuel efficient in the United States. There's absolutely no reason why those fuel efficiency standards shouldn't be rising, given the oil crisis we're facing, given the air pollution challenges we're facing. We have to insist that automobiles and trucks get better auto mileage standard. And unfortunately, the list of legislative initiatives that we would benefit from is almost endless. But certainly, we need to pay attention to those initiatives and support them where we can.
We're going to have to stop because we're here at the end of the time. I want to say for people who are listening, if you're interested in the book we've talked about, you can head out to the bookstore and look for it, What Matters Most. If you have internet access, there is a website for the book. You can find out more about it and about our guest, Jeffrey Hollander. That's www.whatmattersmost.biz, B-I-Z. So you can do that. Jeffrey Hollander is president and CEO of Seventh Generation. It's the country's biggest brand of green household products. And Mr. Hollander, thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Our show, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates. This year, celebrating their 22nd anniversary, Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. And that is it for us here on Focus 580. But, of course, there's more news and sports and weather and features and other things coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host of the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today after the 1 o'clock news, we'll hear the story of an explorer, naturalist, writer, and pirate, William Dampier. Writer Diana Preston joins us following the 1